Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Richard Palatsky, and he'll be answering your most important questions on fly fishing with terrestrials in the Rockies. The show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Richard a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address on the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Richard Palatsky about fly fishing with terrestrials in the Rockies. Whether you tie flies as a hobby or a profession, and no matter what degree of perfectionism fly tying becomes, much more enjoyable and efficient with the proper tools. Wasatch tools are rugged yet beautiful crafted tools featuring Cocobolo handles and 24-karat gold accents that fit nicely in the hand and are smooth to the touch. Manufactured in the United States from the best materials available, all tools are unconditionally guaranteed for your lifetime. If you ever have a problem with a Wasatch tool, just return it to their factory in Albany, Oregon. They'll replace it, no questions asked. To find out more about Wasatch Tools, visit www.flytyingtools.com. That's www.flytyingtools.com. Well, before we introduce Richard, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Rich's section that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a $20 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. And if you win that certificate, you'll be able to redeem that either online or in their store in person. So here's how you can win that gift certificate. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. And the question is going to be something that Richard and I talk about during the show, and you must submit your answer along with your name and your location in the text box on our homepage. That's the same text box you can ask questions in during the show. So listen closely, use your best typing skills at the end of the show, and maybe you'll win that $20 gift certificate. Our guest tonight is Richard Palatsky. Richard lives in Littleton, Colorado with his wife Cheryl and lab mix dog Bella. He was born in Montreal, Canada, and we'll forgive him for that, and grew up in upstate New York. Richard has lived in Colorado for over 28 years, so he's almost a native. He has been fly tying and fly fishing for over 30 years. For the last 15 years, he has specialized in tying flies for and fishing high mountain lakes in Colorado. He does many fly tying demonstrations at events like the Fly Fishing Show, International Sportsman's Expo, Black Canyon Fly Fishing Show, the Western Colorado Fly Fishing Expo, the New Mexico Trout Symposium, Federation of Fly Fishers National Conclave, and at fly tying clinics at many Denver area shops and TU and FFF chapters. In addition, Rich is a lifetime member of both Trout Unlimited and the Federation of Fly Fishers. He is a member of Cutthroat Chapter Trout Unlimited and a past member of the Board of Directors of the Colorado Trout Unlimited. Richard's flies have been exhibited in the Boulder Art Museum and the Pritchard Art Museum in Idaho Falls. He is currently a member of the Regal Engineering and Wasatch Angling Pro staffs. Richard and his fly patterns have been featured in books by Gary LaFontaine, Pat Dorsey, Marty Bartholomew, Jim Schollmeyer, and also in Southwest Fly Fishing. His patterns are displayed on the Internet in both pictures and video. His biggest influence in fly tying have been Gary LaFontaine, Jack Dennis, John Betts, Craig Matthews, and Al McKay. What Richard likes best about fly tying is the creative aspect, especially searching out little-known materials to create new patterns. Richard, welcome back to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Well, good evening, Roger.
Good to have you back again. Last time we were talking about terrestrials, too. Damsels and dragons, right?
Damsels and dragons are not terrestrials because they spend their nymph stages in water.
Just testing you, Richard.
That's interesting because the first question that was sent in is, what is a terrestrial?
That's right. So and let's start there. Let's start right there, Richard. And
okay,
what is a terrestrial?
A terrestrial is an animal that spends either all of its life or predominantly all of its life on land. And when we're talking about terrestrials for fly fishing, we're talking about a lot of things that live on land and end up in the water. And that can include things like ants and beetles and grasshoppers, wasps, hornets, bees, mice even, for instance, are terrestrials. And a mouse pattern is a terrestrial fly.
What about people when they fall in? It's got to be a big fish, right?
Yes.
So down in Tarpon Country, maybe a human can become a terrestrial, or in Shark Country. Yeah. So we've defined that now in Colorado or in the Rocky Mountains, the broader region there. Which should, of these that you just mentioned, which of the ones should we concern ourselves as fly fishers with?
Well, the terrestrial imitations that we should most concern ourselves with are beetles, ants, and grasshoppers. Now, there are some exotics that sometimes show up, such as, for instance, cicadas on the Green River in Utah. Mormon crickets and crickets in general actually show up quite a bit in the water, just like grasshoppers. Mormon crickets are common, for instance, on the Green River and also places like Slough Creek in Yellowstone National Park. Mm. Slough Creek has quite a few Mormon crickets show up there. Actually, cicadas, too. I've fished cicadas in Colorado. We've had cicadas at some of the lakes in Colorado, and I've actually tied imitations to imitate cicadas here in Colorado.
Are those a different insect than up on the Green River?
Yeah. There's the Green River cicadas are annual cicadas. There's several different types of cicadas. The ones I was fishing were black and yellow striped.
Mm.
interesting bodies. Now, there are also a number of terrestrial insects, such as leaf cutters, inchworms, for instance.
Right.
And it's interesting to look at the history of terrestrial fishing because terrestrials' fly patterns have been around for several hundred years. They're described in an 1836 volume of The Complete Angler. And the real modern hotbed of terrestrial fly fishing was in starting in the late 40s and early 50s in eastern Pennsylvania on a bunch of the limestone creeks out there, like the Latorte. And you had fly fishers like Vince Marinaro and Charlie Fox, who the traditional modus operandi out there was to catch a lot of fish early in the year, and as the summer wore on and got into fall, a lot of fish were rising, but no one was catching anything. And what they did was they seined the river. And they found things like inchworms and ants and beetles and even what they call jacids, which are kind of a beetle-like insect. And they started tying imitations of those specific bugs and catching fish with them. They caught a lot of fish with them. But terrestrials have been around for quite a while. They're very effective, certainly in my fishing. I have a long history with terrestrials. The first fly that I ever tied was a black thread ant that's in Jack Dennis's first fly tying book. Mm. And I tied that fly for about 3 months, the first winter that I tied flies, and that's all I tied. I probably must have tied 15 or 20 dozen of those, and I had them for years. And they worked. I also caught my first fly in Colorado on an ant. It was a red-brown dubbed fur ant, and it was on the South Platte River. Mm. So I've been fishing terrestrial patterns all of my fly fishing life.
Yeah, right.
And I love them.
Mike Slay in Georgia, he asks, I often fish in the Smoky Mountains. Do you think there'd be much difference in fishing terrestrials in the Smokies as opposed to the Rocky Mountain region?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I think the Smokies terrestrials would work extremely well because of something that occurs here in the Rockies. It occurs in the Sierras in California. It occurs in the Smokies. It's called, it was termed by Gary LaFontaine and Ralph Cutter as upslope blow-in. I call it terrestrial rain. And what that is upslope adiabatic winds lift these terrestrial bugs, they're light, and they lift them up in the air. And Gary LaFontaine spoke extensively about that in his book, Fly Fishing the Mountain Lakes, which is what really turned me on into the concept of terrestrial rain. He talked to pilots that were flying at 13,000 feet, flying to Livingston from Deer Lodge, and they were encountering bugs. In fact, they'd get so many that they'd have to clean their windscreens. And this is at 13,000 feet. Mm-hmm. And Gary, being a very bright fellow, figured that what goes up must come down. So he went to high mountain lakes that were below that area, and he actually spread out bed sheets between float tubes and counted the bugs that fell. Mm-hmm. And he saw ants, he saw beetles, he saw grasshoppers, he saw bugs he couldn't identify. Especially the Smokies have a lot of small streams and a lot of brook trout, which is real fun fishing. But I just was looking this week at a bunch of different sources on the internet, and there's a real interesting article called Secrets of Fishing Terrestrial Flies by Tom Rosenbauer on the internet. If you just Google Tom Rosenbauer's name, he's a very well-known author who's written most of the Orvis fly fishing guides.
And in fact, Tom is going to be our guest on our next show.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah.
I pulled a quote out from his article. If you fish small streams, terrestrials are more important than large rivers.
Well, then everybody better come back next week and listen to Tom.
let me
expand upon the topic. Yeah.
Let me finish the quote. I've got a bit more. A trout's diet in some small streams is made up almost entirely of terrestrials, as these smaller waters don't have large expanses of insect-producing riffles.
So that fits right in with the Smokies. There's a lot of small.
Yes, there's a lot of small streams in the Smokies, and you're going to have those same winds. You're going to have bugs falling on you, and it doesn't matter that when you get those bugs up in the air, it falls on the lakes, it falls on the rivers.
Right.
You're going to see them.
Yep.
And you can fish them.
Great. Yeah, I guess the one thing you'd have to look at is, like you said, there's maybe some bugs that are coming from the next state, in fact, that might not be, natural to the area. But I guess in any region, you'd have to just do a little research on what are the naturals in the area. Cicadas that are specific to the Green River and things like that.
Yeah.
Do a little research.
Actually, Ralph Cutter, in his book, Fish Food, describes he and his wife were fishing at about 12,000 feet in the Sierras, and they came up to a lake, and there were rises all over it, so they put on midge patterns, midge emergers, because that's generally what you see at that altitude. And what they found was that the fish were taking pale morning guns that had been blown up from below,
mm-hmm.
from lower altitudes. There were, pale morning guns are a stream mayfly. They don't live in lakes.
Yeah.
And they'd been blown up to the lake. And actually, in Gary LaFontaine's book on fly fishing the mountain lakes, he had an anecdote about fishing in Colorado, and he was sitting out on a lake and had termites falling on him. They had flying termites.
Hmm.
So you never know what you're going to find right. in that terrestrial rain, but the thing is that those bugs are going to be falling. A real good place on any stream or lake is anywhere you've got overhanging vegetation, because there's going to be all kinds of bugs on the vegetation, and they take one bad step, and they're in the water, and they're fish food.
Right, right. Let's talk a little bit about flies and tying these, and we have a question from Matt Lowry in Maryland, and he says he fishes out west quite a bit. He said, what's your thoughts about foam imitations versus old-school patterns? And I assume by old-school he means hair or feather patterns. And do you use a different technique than foam?
Well, I've pretty much gone through the entire spectrum of terrestrial patterns. A real good example is my ants. I've tied probably 8 or 10 different ant patterns. Ever since that first ant pattern that I started tying. If you look in my boxes today, I have nothing but foam ants.
Okay.
Now, I will possibly this year, I'm going to try some sinking ants. I'm going to do some epoxy ants specifically, because it's something that I've wanted to experiment with. I usually pick out a couple of things every year that I'm going to experiment with, and that'll be one of mine for this year. But I've gone through the thread ants. You can do ants that are tied with acetate floss and then treated with acetone to melt the floss. You can tie what they call fur ants, which are just dubbing and a hackle, typically. I've tied McMurray ants, which are balsa wood. What I tie right now, I've been tying for about the last 10 years foam ants, which I generally tie out of either Evisote, which is ethyl vinyl acetate foam, or polyethylene foam, the craft foam that you see in craft shops. And I've used those materials for the body all that time. I've used different materials for the leg. I've used deer hair, which I found dries out and gets brittle. I've used black crystal flash, which is a reasonable material for legs. My latest patterns, the last couple of years, I've used paintbrush bristles, just nylon paintbrush bristles, because you can you can bend them, and they'll make nice little joints in the bends. You can bend them with your fingers, and they look pretty neat. And last 2 years, in fact, I've caught my biggest fish of the year both years on an ant.
Wow.
And it's interesting, because my favorite pattern, terrestrial pattern of fish for lakes, always is and has been a foam beetle. I don't fish ants enough, but boy, when I fish them, they work.
Okay, okay. Now, we need to take a quick break here, but when we come back, we'll talk more about tying and
okay.
these materials that you've been using. So hang on for just a minute. Keeney's Fly Shop in Sacramento, California features classes on all aspects of fly fishing. They have an extensive inventory and fly tying department and a friendly, experienced staff whose primary goal is your complete satisfaction. Among their many services, one can book private waters or take advantage of their international travel service. Visit their extensive website at www.keeney.com. That's K-I-E-N-E.com. Or call Keeney's Fly Shop at 1-800-400-0359. That's 1-800-400-0359. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Richard Palatsky about fly fishing with terrestrials in the Rockies. If you'd like to ask Richard a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com. and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll get your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, let's continue on here. But first, as I always do, Richard, let me ask you about what's going on in your fly fishing world. What have you been up to lately?
I've been doing some fly fishing shop demos. Done about three in the last 5 weeks. I did one at Hook Fly Fishing. I did one at Front Range Anglers. And I'm doing one next week at Angler's Roost in Fort Collins. And essentially tie my own patterns. I am busy tying right now. I'm tying flies for a charity event for Wounded Warriors, which is a group that takes Afghanistan and Iraq vets fly fishing and fly tying.
Great.
And great charity. But
yeah.
They're going to have a fundraiser, and I'm tying flies for them. I tie probably on the order of 150 dozen flies a year that I donate to various charities.
Wow.
I've donated to my own Trout Unlimited chapter, the FFF, an FFF local chapter, the Gunnison Gorge Anglers in Montrose this year.
Do you tie commercially?
A little. I tie
little.
Some of my patterns are at the Blue Quill Angler in Evergreen.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly
you just fish, tie, and have fun.
Yeah, I'm retired. What else do you do? Actually, I do a lot of cruising. My wife and I do a lot of cruises. We're going on our, it'll be my 27th cruise in May.
Oh, my gosh.
So we do a lot of traveling, too, so it's a lot of fun.
Good. Well, let's get back talking about flies and tying here. And so the question was, actually, the question you were answering before was, what's your thoughts on foam imitation, the old school patterns? So have you moved pretty much to foam, and are you staying away from, like, you know, hair and feather type patterns that are old school? Or
For terrestrials, generally, that's what I do.
Yeah.
I tie a lot of foam terrestrials, ants, beetles, hopper imitations are either all or predominantly foam. I do, for instance, a foam bodied Madam-X. Madam-X is an old Doug Swisher pattern that's a semi-bullet head hopper, essentially. And there's a few things you can do with it. You can put legs on it, various types. But I tie the body out of foam. Doug originally tied the body out of yellow thread. And I found out that foam floats better.
Yeah.
That's a really good pattern. And I've got a new pattern called a Hoppin' John hopper pattern that's all foam. And it uses a foam leg cutter. It cuts a right angle leg, like your hopper legs that stick up on a hopper. Mm-hmm. And those go on a essentially a Chernobyl type body. And it's a really good looking hopper fly. I've only tied it for about 3 weeks. And it looks great. It's one of the flies that you just look at it and you know it's going to kill them.
Now, I did get a question in on the internet here. It doesn't say who it's from, but he says, I'm sorry I missed your tying demo at Front Range Anglers. Could you briefly describe the cricket hopper pattern you featured there? Is that the one you're talking
about? That's the one I'm talking about. In fact, if you just Google Front Range Anglers and go to their webpage, if you look at their Front Range Angler fishing blogs, they have a blog on it with pictures and the recipe for it.
Yeah.
We don't have a video made yet. That'll be the next thing I do. Probably I'd like to get a video on the internet of me tying it. Because seeing the fly and seeing the recipe are one thing, but knowing how to tie it is sometimes entirely another thing.
Yeah.
It, It's a great either cricket or hopper pattern, depending on the colors. If you do a black over brown color, it's going to look like a cricket. If you do something like dark brown over yellow, tan over yellow, or olive over yellow, it'll look like a hopper.
Now, we have a question in here from Steve Maz in Detroit, Michigan. He asks, what materials are best for tying your own terrestrial? So we know you like foam, and you mentioned these nylon bristles that I hadn't heard that before. That's a new one for me.
That's paintbrush bristles.
Yeah. What other materials do you like to work with on these terrestrials?
I use deer hair, for instance, on my foam-bodied Madamax. I use rubber legs on a lot of them. If you want things that are legs, you want you can use, again, deer hair as legs. You can use black crystal flash as legs. Now, typically, you're forming your bodies out of foam, and you can do various other things. You can put a wing, for instance, on an ant or a set of wings. You can use a number of different clear materials, or you can use something like polypropylene, even something like sparkle organza, anything that'll imitate that wing, hackle tips also. I know I was looking through some old flies in my garage yesterday. I was rooting around in some stuff, and I ran across a box of flies that I probably tied 15 years ago, and I've got wasps. I tied wasps specifically for one stillwater here in Denver area, Quincy Reservoir, that has wasps that fall in the water out of dead trees along the side of the lake. And I ran into this probably 20 years ago. I was out fishing in early March. This is on March 6th, if you can believe it, in Colorado. They had open water. Then the reservoir was open, and I was out there. I was fishing subsurface flies. I was fishing woolly buggers. I was fishing carry specials. I was fishing leech patterns, and I started to see rises. And, okay, I kicked my way over there in my float tube and was looking around, and I saw a wasp on the water. It was black. And so at that time, I had just started tying beetles. I had learned to tie them from blue ribbon flies up in West Yellowstone, Montana, and gotten my first foam materials up there. It was Traun River foam out of Germany, and it's 2-millimeter polyethylene foam, and I tied some beetles, so I had some black beetles with me. So I put on a black beetle and started catching fish. These fish were coming up and taking the wasps, and it doesn't take an awful lot to imitate some of these, but I tied some very good wasp imitations out of foam and using hackle tips as wings. Mm. And it's not hard to do. You can get, for instance, bumblebee striped foam that looks like a bee body.
Right.
I've actually tied bees and fished them. In fact, there's one in one of Jim Scholmeyer's books. I have my Johnny Be Good, which is a bee pattern.
We've got a question that came in on the internet while you were talking about wings, and this is specifically, this is Rod down in Amarillo, Texas. He says, when you're tying your flying ants, what type of wings do you use, and how are they laid on the body?
Generally, when I tie my ants, I don't bother with wings. I fished them without, and I don't see any difference in catch rate. And if that's the case, I'm going to tie them without. I do have some materials that I do tie winged ants with. I don't fish them a lot, though. I usually fish a wingless. The thing is, too, that if you look at Gary LaFontaine's book on fly fishing the mountain lakes, when he counted bugs that fell out of the sky, the number one was wingless ants.
Wingless ants.
Yeah, they're blown in.
Yeah,
they're not flying.
Okay, so
the flying ants, you know, are usually a once a year occurrence. the wingless ants are around all the time.
Yeah. Now, answer his question. What do you use when you do tie them? What do you use?
I've got some almost like plastic bag material that I use, and I'm not even sure where I got it from, but it's clear. You could actually tie them out of the Ziploc bags. Mm-hmm. They'd make a decent wing. You don't need an awful lot. The thing is that an ant, when it's in the water, is going to be, it'll move for maybe a couple of minutes, and then it'll drown, and it'll just be sitting on the water or sink. And those wings will just be laying out on the water.
Okay.
Okay. Kind of splayed out.
Yeah.
And, but you can use, like I said earlier, you can use polypropylene. Polypropylene would be good. You could use sparkle organza, something that's light colored. You could use antron. Carded antron would work very well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You could use also hackle tips. If you wanted to go to natural materials for a wing, you could use hackle tips.
Yeah.
And in that case, you'd use white hackle tips, probably.
Okay. Another question here from Bob in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. Which hopper pattern and size is best for all-around use in the Rockies?
Well, I'll tell you how I work with hoppers. Whenever I go to either a lake or a stream, one of the first things I do is beat the bushes. I look to see what's on the ground, and I look to see what color and size. And I'll try to imitate the predominant size that I see. If I go and just beat through the vegetation along the side of the stream or the lake. Generally with hoppers, there's enough color variation that color isn't terribly important. Size often is. But the thing is, there's also a lot of size variation. You've got anything from these 2.5 to 3 inch long flying hoppers and katydids to very small hoppers. The thing is that when hoppers hatch out, they go through a number of molts and grow in size. So there's a whole size range of hoppers. Typically, the smaller hoppers might be up to an inch or an inch and a half long. But then you've got some of these very large flying hoppers that fly real well. And think about hoppers, too. Hoppers are a seasonal terrestrial. They don't end up in the water a lot until typically late in the year when they're not really good flyers. They're usually pretty good. And actually, a lot of times I've sat and watched hoppers on the water, and a lot of them kick right back to shore if they fall in the water.
Yeah, they're strong enough to do that, huh?
Yeah. If they're only, 6 feet out of the water, a lot of them will kick right back to shore.
That goes to a question we got on the internet here from Tim in Superior, Colorado. He says, what months during the year do you fish ants, beetles, hoppers in the Rocky Mountain region? So you just talked about hoppers. What about ants and beetles? Are those?
Beetles, I fish. I have caught fish on beetles as early as March 6th and as late as November 10th.
Oh, so pretty much the nice season. Yeah.
Well, yeah, the thing is that I know I was at one time, I've caught fish a number of times right at ice out on beetles. Now, I was out in South Park with Mardi Gras Bartholomew once, and we actually saw, we were fishing big dragonfly nymphs and leech patterns on sinking lines. And we started to see rises. And what was coming off the water is there's aquatic beetles. There's beetles that live in the water. Not many people know about them. There's aquatic moths also, but there are aquatic beetles, and these were olive-colored aquatic beetles that were up at the surface. And the fish were coming up and taking them, so we just pulled out some of my handy foam beetles and started catching fish for probably 30 minutes or so while the beetles were still around. And we caught about half a dozen, had a couple break us off. They were big fish, too. But that's fishing when there's just about enough room to make a cast to the edge of the ice on a lake.
Yeah. And then what about ants?
Ants? I typically fish ants usually June to October.
Okay. Okay.
Hoppers, I'll fish July, August, September.
And then another question on the internet came in. Jerry in Helena, Montana asks, is there a time of day that's better for the terrestrials that fall out of the sky from high elevations or the jet stream?
There's two times. if you read Gary LaFontaine's book on fly fishing the mountain lakes, when the bugs start to fall is in the evening when the winds die down. So afternoon and evening is a prime time, and then there's another prime time. It then gets dark. You've still got bugs falling. They fall 8-9 hours of darkness. Mm. First thing in the morning, especially on lakes and on rivers, they'd get carried away. But you've got 8 or 9 hours of terrestrial rain sitting out on the lakes. And first thing in the morning at first light, one of the most effective fishing strategies that you can have in the Rocky Mountains and any place that is going to get terrestrial rain, which would include the Sierras, the Rockies, the Smokies that we talked about. Go out at first light, and you'll see fish rising. A lot of people assume that they're all midging or something like that. A lot of them are taking midges, but a lot of them are taking terrestrials. And what you want at that time, I'll go out typically at that time with a beetle, a size 12 beetle with a size 12 ant trailer, and fish that tandem fly.
Well, neat. We got another question here from Marty in Colorado. I don't know if this is Marty Bartholomew or another Marty, but Bartholomew's been on our show too. He says, what's the most productive fly that you tie and use in still water? Before you said beetle, is that still the one that you're...
That's the one. I've caught thousands of fish on beetles. I've tied tens of thousands of them. One of my favorite patterns to tie, probably my number one pattern favorite to fish is a beetle. And it's interesting because... Ralph Cutter, in his book Fish Foods, describes a trip that he and his wife took to southwest Montana to fish the spring creeks in that area. There's a whole group of spring creeks. And everywhere they went, they'd stop in at the fly shops, and the fly shops would say, they're killing beetles. They're stuffing themselves with beetles. And he and his wife went out to one of the spring creeks, and they... very completely beat the vegetation along the shores looking for insects. And they found three beetles. And they couldn't figure out what was going on. Now, his wife was fishing a hopper imitation, and she hung it up in some weeds and walked across a little arm of the spring creek. And as she walked across, the fish just went into a feeding frenzy behind her. And they couldn't figure out why until they looked. And what she had done is stirred up snails. And snails float. And they look like a beetle. So his wife threw out a beetle and started immediately catching fish from that feeding frenzy from the snails. Now, the thing is that a beetle... is a very common insect. A very interesting fact is that one out of every three living animals is a beetle. They're extremely numerous.
Yeah.
But a beetle, especially how I tie it with a peacock underbody. That's going to look a lot like a housefly. It'll look like a lot of different insects besides a beetle. And the thing is that the fish will take it for a lot of things. It'll look like a water boatman.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, that's what led me into fishing water boatmen and back swimmers was I was catching fish on beetles.
Yeah.
And I'd fish tan beetles and other colored beetles, and I was catching fish on them. There's tan water boatmen. There's a bunch of different colors of water boatmen. Yeah.
Let me hold you on this thought of beetles, and I need to take a quick break. And then when we come back, maybe you can tell us how you tie your beetle and describe that, since that's the hot one for the night here. So hang tight. We'll be right back. The Platte River Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming, features a first-class website covering all aspects of fly fishing the tailwaters of the North Platte River, including up-to-date local fishing reports, fly patterns, guide services, and online shopping for top-of-the-line gear for any travel destination. Platte River Fly Shop provides a professional guide staff for the Blue Ribbon, Trophy, Gray Reef, and Miracle Mile sections of the North Platte River. Visit their extensive website at www.wyotrout.com. That's wyotrout.com. Or you can call them at 1-307-237-5997. That's 1-307-237-5997. If you're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, we're talking to Rich Pulaski about fly fishing with terrestrials in the Rockies. If you'd like to ask Richard a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com. Use that Q&A text box to ask your question. We'll receive it immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. So, Richard, tell us how you tie that beetle. All your secrets.
Well, okay, this is my Colorado crystal beetle. Actually, the pattern is on flytyingclips.com, the site set up by Herman DeGala, who's an excellent fly tyer, and he does a 360-degree camera rotation around a fly pattern, and then if you right-click on it, it'll bring up the materials used.
Cool.
But my foam beetle, typically I tie it anywhere from a size 8 to about a 14. Typically tie it on a standard length dry fly hook. I usually use a Dairiki 305. And tie in a what I do is I for the foam back of the beetle I cut typically 2 millimeter foam, craft foam, polyethylene into strips, and I'll tie a strip in at the bend of the hook. Then I'll wrap the underbody of peacock chenille. Peacock chenille is a very tough material. I've had beetles that I've caught 15 fish on, and they're still recognizable as a beetle. They're very durable underbodies as opposed to natural peacock hurl, which unless you reinforce it with wire or something, is not very durable. But that peacock green underbody really stands out on the fly, and you'll see it well from underwater. A lot of beetles have a peacock green underbody. But you wrap that up to the front of the hook. You pull that strip of foam over the body up and tie it down up by the eye. You then tie in your legs. And you can use deer hair, you can use black crystal flash. On some of the larger patterns, like the eights, I use rubber legs. And then I tie on a little yellow Evisote foam, ethyl vinyl acetate indicator, so that you've got a spot of yellow. You can see that spot of yellow 60 feet away on the water. And without that spot on there, you can't see that fly. It's that simple. You tie an ant or a beetle out of all black foam without that indicator on there, you will never be able to see it. The fish will come up, they'll suck it down, they'll spit it out, and they'll laugh at you, and all you'll hear is fish laughter coming back from the water.
Now, I just went out to that site, flytyingclips.com, and they have your tiger beetle there. I don't see a crystal.
Yeah, they don't have the black beetle. The tiger beetle is exactly the same as the black beetle. that has metallic foil glued onto the black foam. That is black foam, but it's got a green metallic foil applied to it. So it's exactly the same construction as the collar of crystal beetles, the black one.
Okay, okay.
And
now,
the thing
so
is,
when you say that green back, is that a separate piece of material, or is
no, no, it's glued right onto the foam.
That you glued on, or did it come that way?
Yeah, okay. I glue it on. I make it myself.
Okay, okay.
And actually, that is a very good imitation of the six-spotted tiger beetle, which is a common metallic-covered, colored beetle. It is bright green like that.
Just like that, cool. Actually, so, folks, if you missed that, that's, again, flytimeclips.com, and you can see several of Rich's patterns there and get the recipes for those as well. So, good.
My paintbrush ant is also on there. Very good picture of it.
Yeah, very good. Now, David Watkins in Dallas, Texas asks, do foam bugs, which are easier to tie, work as well as hair and feather imitations?
Heck yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they float well. The fish love them.
Okay. And what's your, David in Columbus, Ohio wants to know what your favorite fly to tie is and why.
It's probably my Colorado crystal beetle. I've tied tens of thousands of them, and I just enjoy it. I've tied a lot of them. In fact, if you look at Marty Bartholomew's book, Tying Flies Like a Pro, there's a picture of me in there with a clear glass bowl full of beetles. And that bowl holds 270 dozen beetles, size 14 Colorado crystal beetles.
Oh my gosh. That's a few. Now, when you tie, I guess this question might not be applicable, but do you use floatant on any of your terrestrials, or is it just not necessary considering the foam?
I use floatant on them.
Oh, you do?
I use the silicone type floatants, so in squeeze bottles, various types, but I put floatant on them, and you don't have to, but I do find that even the closed cell foams will absorb a little bit of water and sink down a little bit, so I always treat them with floatant. I've done that for a number of years now. And I'll even find, for instance, if I'm casting a beetle, that after about half an hour, I have to retreat it. And it pops right up again and floats better. But it'll get a little low in the water.
Yeah.
And they are closed cell, but they still will absorb a little bit of water.
Now, is there anything you do differently in the way of equipment as far as rod, weight, length, and so forth when you're fishing terrestrials, or is it pretty much your standard trout setup?
Typically, for the last 3 years, I've fished a 10-foot 5-weight rod. I like 5-weights for fishing terrestrials. For lakes, especially, I like a 10-foot rod.
Mm-hmm. Why the longer rod? I understand a lot of people like longer rods on streams, but why the lake?
Well, a lot of times when you're fishing out of a float tube or a pontoon boat, the longer reach helps. It'll help you with your casts. Actually, a lot of people I know a real good friend of mine, Pat Dorsey, head guide for the Blue Quill Angler, has been fishing a 10-foot Orvis rod for the last 4 years, and it's really good, for instance, for short line nymphing because you can reach.
Yeah, definitely.
Much better.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I like the 10-foot rod. It allows me some very long casts. I can really reach with it. A lot of times I'll fish off the shore with it, and I like to get, especially a good windy day, I like to fish terrestrials in the wind. It's a lot of fun, and get either a quartering wind or a wind behind you. And you can essentially do extremely long roll casts and casts right off the shore of a lake. I like doing that.
That helps.
But that 10-foot rod, I go back to a 9-foot, and it seems puny.
Yeah. Hey, now, do you always use floating line, or do you ever find a need to use any kind of a sinking line?
For terrestrials, almost always you'll use a floating line, not even a sink tip. If you're going to be fishing something like a sunken ant, what I'd do with that is probably fish a dry fly and use that as a dropper.
Yeah. There's another question that kind of relates to this that we got in on the internet. Let me grab it here. Norm in Dublin, I don't know if that's Dublin, Ireland or not. But he says, seeing as rivers can tumble and drown aquatic insects, carrying the dead food items downstream, do you pay much time to fishing drowned terrestrials on the water? So you talked about ants. What about other? And you said that
actually, in Ralph Cutter's book on fish foods, Ralph Cutter is a disciple of Gary LaFontaine. Both of them have spent a lot of time underwater observing fish and filming fish. And what Ralph Cutter has observed, for instance, is that there's a lot of drowned insects that are taken, a lot of drowned hoppers and crickets and ants and beetles. I don't fish them, but and Ralph doesn't fish them. But he says he's seen a lot of them taken. The point that Ralph makes is that it's a lot more fun fishing them on top.
Yeah.
And yeah. That's my favorite thing in terrestrial fishing is the point-and-shoot dry fly tactics. A lot of times you're fishing to rises or nervous water. That's a lot of fun. Sometimes you're fishing blind. That's a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the flies you go to when all else fails sometimes, right?
Yeah. It's a good searching pattern. Actually, I had another quote here from Gary LaFontaine in Fly Fishing the Mountain Lakes. The most important class of dry fly for mountain lakes is the terrestrial.
Yeah.
By far. In fact, Gary LaFontaine, in describing the flies he carries for mountain lakes, had a bunch of fly patterns and beetles.
Yeah.
It was a big part of his arsenal.
Now, what about, we've got a couple of questions here. Both of them regarding leader and tippet. So can you explain, is there anything special you do with that, or what your terminal tackle is for that? And that'll answer both David's
question sure.
from Ohio and Steve's in Tennessee.
Typical, if I fish a size 8 beetle, I fish a 2X tippet. Fish are not leader shy. Typically, that's a big beetle, and you'll usually raise some big fish to it. If I'm fishing a size 14 beetle, I'll go a little smaller. I might go to a 3X or even a 4X. But in that size range from 8s to 14s, on the bigger terrestrial pattern, something like a Fat Albert or a Chernobyl ant, or my Hop and John pattern, I'll fish 2X. Fish are not leader shy on those big terrestrials or the smaller terrestrials, but
chomp them, huh?
Yeah, they'll come up and take them very readily on a 2X tippet. It's like a lot of my subsurface patterns that I fish in lakes. I fish on a 0X, woolly buggers, leeches, size 4 dragonfly nymphs. I fish on a 0X.
Yeah.
Streamer flies, clouser minnows,
okay.
Things like that.
Okay, now let's talk a little about strategies and tactics here about fishing terrestrials. And got a bunch of different kind of random questions here, but I'll start running through them here. Chris in Boise, how do you fish a hatch that really isn't a hatch? When do you decide to fish a terrestrial, and what bug do you decide to imitate?
Well, that's interesting. A lot of times fishing lakes. That's my searching pattern. I'll try that. If that doesn't work, I'll try something else. A lot of times it depends on whether you have some overhanging vegetation, for instance, along the side of a lake or a stream. You're going to look for places like that specifically because that's where the terrestrials are going to end up. They're going to be falling out of that vegetation, and the fish will be looking for them there. The other thing, too, is two times a day I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, early in the morning and in the evening, afternoon and evening, because that's when the bugs will be falling in the evening, and then the fish will be picking them up in the morning in the first light.
We've got a couple of follow-up questions on tying fly, so let me kind of jump back and grab these. These came in on the internet, so and then we'll come right back to these strategies. One of them is, do you ever use rattles, glass, or plastic in your flies? That's from Rick in Southeast Pennsylvania.
No.
No. All right.
Any propellers? Haven't seen any real use for them in terrestrials.
Oh, by the way, just the propeller thing just kind of hit me here. A good friend of a lot of ours recently passed away, and he used to use propellers.
And,
Pete.
Pistol Pete.
Yeah, so, and he just passed away, I guess, about a month or so ago, kind of icon in the industry, Pete Parker. So just if people knew him, he was a guest on our show and a great saltwater fisherman and a thought of fly fishing. So just to let people know in case you didn't know about Pete. But he used to tie flies with propellers on them, and that always made me kind of laugh. So, but anyway.
That is a recognized pattern of Pistol Pete.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I miss Pete, too. Pete was a wonderful part of the fly fishing and fly tying community.
Yeah.
And it was a real shock to lose him.
Yeah, yeah, it was. Another question from the Internet, Rod Brashears in Amarillo. Do you ever use the cutters that are out there for different terrestrials? The foam cutters, I guess he's talking about.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
In fact, the cutters that I use for the Hoppin' John pattern are, there's a beaver tail cutter set and a hopper leg cutter set, three different sizes of each, that's available from River Road Creations in Stevensville, Montana. And if you look up on their site, they've got pictures of me in their fly tying gallery, and they've got pictures of my damsels and dragons that I use cutters on also. But I've got a lot of cutters. I've used cutters for crease flies, for foam frogs.
Okay.
Number of they're different cutters that I use. They're very good. And in fact, I was cutting flies. I was cutting fly bodies today and tying Hopping Johns. I was tying tan over yellow Hopping Johns.
Okay, another question here, jumping back to the leader, and then we'll get back to the strategies and so forth. What was the length? This is Jerry, and Helena wants to know what length you typically use when fishing terrestrials in still water.
Typically a 9-foot leader is about right. For terrestrials, maybe a 9-foot leader to a 3X or a 2X.
Okay.
Would work out very nicely.
Okay, let's see here. Here, Steve in Monument, Colorado says, Rich, can you please talk a little about methods for putting action on terrestrials that crawl on the still water surfaces? They seem to move pretty rapidly and switch direction while moving in a general direction.
I don't put any motion on them.
No?
None. I let them sit.
Let them sit.
In fact, what I'll usually do when I'm working water is I will throw a fly out and I will let it sit for perhaps 45 seconds to a minute, and then I move the cast. If they don't pick it up almost immediately, I'm not waiting. I'm going to cover a lot of water with it. But typically, you know, one thing that I did early on when I was fishing lakes I was fascinated by all the bugs I'd find in the water. Whenever I find a bug, I'd kick over and look at it. Most of them are dead. They're just sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see ants, you'll see beetles. The hoppers tend to move a little bit, and you can twitch the hoppers. And I've actually used some of the bigger terrestrials, like Chernobyls or Fat Alberts, stripping them.
Mm-hmm. And what about water boatmen?
Water boatmen, typically, the way I like to fish a water boatman, I'll fish a big beetle with a water boatman dropper, and I do give it gentle strips, because water boatmen do kick. They're alive.
Right, right.
But a water boatman is not a terrestrial. It's an aquatic insect.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But the terrestrials, generally, I let sit. I do strip them occasionally, and you'll get some hits stripping them, but there's no real necessity to have any motion on them.
So your technique is more, if you want to move it, just pick the cast up and move it over a couple feet.
Yeah, pick up, put another cast out, and cover a lot of water. Because especially, for instance, if one of the things I'd like to do in my pontoon boat is work the shoreline. And I'll cast along the entire length of a shoreline, casting it within about 3 to 5 feet of the shore, because that's where a lot of terrestrials land.
Sure, yeah.
Especially if there's overhanging vegetation or vegetation along the side that is a good source of terrestrials.
Thomas Murphy in Redmond, Washington wants to know, can you talk about the differences in fishing terrestrials on still waters versus streams, and where and when in the lake is most effective? Well, you just answered that one. But what about still waters versus streams?
Still waters versus streams. Streams, you're going to be doing the same thing, especially you're going to be looking for areas with overhanging vegetation. Typically, places that are going to yield good terrestrial ambush sites where the fish will be looking for them. That's the high grade right there, is to look for overhanging vegetation along a lot of the rivers and streams, especially small streams. Small streams are fabulous for terrestrials. You can just really pick up a lot of fish. What was really interesting, Ralph Cutter in his book Fish Foods cited a study that was done on a small stream, and what they did was they looked at the abundance of terrestrial insects and the abundance of aquatic insects, and then they compared that abundance in the area to what they found in the fish's stomachs. And what they found was essentially all of the terrestrials got eaten, and only maybe 20% of the aquatic insects that were around ever ended up in the stomach.
Interesting, yeah.
So a high percentage of terrestrials get taken, especially in small streams. That quote by Tom Rosenbauer is very, very telling.
Yeah.
Actually, Tom, in his article on the Internet, which I really enjoyed, one of his favorite ways to fish terrestrials is to fish a beetle with a beadhead nymph dropper. Mm. And that's actually a rig that I like to fish in lakes, because I'll use a beadhead calabatus nymph below about a size 8 Colorado crystal beetle, black beetle.
What was that article that Tom wrote?
It's called, let me look at the, I've got the, it's Secrets of Fishing Terrestrial Flies. It's on the Orvis site, I believe. Fascinating article. I found another one by Rick Hefele, who is an entomologist, actually, who wrote a really good book called Western Hatches with Dave Hughes. And it's terrestrial insects, trout treats, or essential food. One point that he made on terrestrials is that terrestrials become very important, especially in small streams, because late summer and fall, the major hatches die off.
Right.
so those major hatches aren't available, and fish feed very heavily on terrestrials.
Yeah, grouse, a hopper is a much bigger meal than a bidge, huh?
Oh, yes, definitely. Well, a hopper, a cricket, a beetle, an ant, they're all bigger.
Yeah.
But,
by the way, that article does come right up, Secrets of Fishing Terrestrial Flies on the website.
Yeah.
Check it out. And sounds like a good article. David Watkins in Dallas, Texas, he says, what are your favorite terrestrials around Rocky Mountain National Park and the Big Thompson? And do, let's just leave it at that, the other part of the question we answered.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't fish a lot around Rocky Mountain National Park. The one place I do fish is Lily Lake, which is officially in the park, but it's not within the gates. But I did, just before the show, Google. I used my Google, and I found a blog from a guy who fishes Rocky Mountain National Park, and telling exactly what his favorite fly for the park all around was. And it was a black foam flying ant.
The other one I've heard of from a lot of people is the beetle again.
Yes, the ant. If I go out anywhere on a lake in the mountains, I will have a multitude of ants and beetles.
Lots of them. Here's another interesting question came in on the Internet, relates to Rocky Mountain National Park. Charlie King in Denver, Colorado says, we always assume bigger flies mean bigger fish. With some smaller fish in smaller streams, like in Rocky Mountain National Park, what's the smallest fish you've caught on a terrestrial?
Probably about 3 inches.
There you go, Charlie. Hope you're happy.
You know, one thing
3 inches. Jeez. You should have scared him off, you know. I mean, that's, you know.
Probably
yanked him out, and he probably ended up in a tree.
I've had instances of flying fish like that.
Yeah,
so,
we all have.
Actually, one thing about terrestrials are great for bass and bluegills. If you ever find a place that's got bass and bluegills, they kill them.
Yeah.
I've caught tons of bass and bluegills. I've got a friend that has a little one-acre bass and bluegill pond in his backyard. We built it about 8 years ago, laid down a liner, and he fills it from the irrigation ditches in his area. And we've had tons of fun in there. What we keep... as you walk out to the pond from his kitchen, we keep a jar of beetles. And you just take a handful of beetles, and that's what you fish with. But you catch all kinds of fish on beetles. I've even caught grass carp on beetles.
Thomas Murphy, Redmond, Washington again, he says, for non-bug terrestrials, like frogs and mice, are there better times to use them? For example, do the meat eaters only come out at night?
Well, frogs are not necessarily nocturnal. I've fished frogs and mice here in Colorado. Mice generally are good for evening and even all the way up to after dark. You can take some very big browns, especially on mice. Frogs are around at night. They're around in the daytime also. I don't think it makes a difference on frogs. They're not nocturnal.
Yeah.
But I think you have better chances on both mice and frogs at night. Frogs are active at night. They're not necessarily strictly nocturnal, though.
Right.
They do feed in the daytime, for instance, because they eat bugs. There aren't a lot of bugs at night.
And I think you answered this earlier. Nathan in Chicago asked them, do you ever fish ants under the surface as nymphs? And you said you were fishing ants as droppers before, didn't you?
I fish them as droppers, but they're just at the lowest they get is just in the film. But I'm going to actually try some sinking ants this year because I've been intrigued by the notion of it. And according to Ralph Cutter in his book Fish Foods, a lot of bugs get taken underwater.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not as much fun.
Right. Well, now, this next question is kind of interesting because I'm going to apply it to terrestrials, but it could be quite a discussion on if you're nymphing. But here's the question. Alan in Connecticut asks, if there are two anglers using similar equipment with similar flies, what would you say is the major difference as to why one catches fish and why one doesn't?
I'd say casting ability.
Yeah.
There are people that absolutely can't catch a fish. Sometimes I've been out with people at different times, and either I caught them all or they caught them all, and it was someone who's about my ability. So sometimes it's just chance.
Yeah,
I've certainly had the occasions like that where that's happened, but I've also had times where I'm sitting there catching fish after fish, and I give my rod with the fly on it to the other guy, and he can't catch anything. So,
yeah. I know a lot of times when you're nymphing and so forth, a lot of it has to do with where you are in the water column, you know?
Like right.
One guy's up a foot and a half higher than the other guy, and he's not catching any fish. You know?
Right, and a drag-free drift and a bunch of different things, mending line properly. The mechanics in moving water are a lot different than in still water. Still water, you need to be a good caster, or at least a moderately good. You only have to throw a fly 35 or so feet, but you got to be able to put it out. And in a lot of cases, actually, this is a question that someone else is going to ask later on, is do you want a loud splat with a terrestrial? It depends on the terrestrial. Some of the bigger ones, like a hopper or a Chernobyl ant, I like to see splat because fish actually listen for big bugs like that. But something like an ant or a beetle, I like to lay it down very nicely.
Yeah, yeah. Tom Faulkner, Dallas, Texas, asks, Rich, I've read somewhere that even though grasshoppers are flying around the streams, the trout don't key in on them till late summer. Grasshoppers are very proficient flyers till close to the end of the summer. Do you find this true, or and do you wait for them, or do you start fishing for them as soon as they're there?
I find that's generally true. They're very strong flyers until close to the end of their life, and a lot of them don't end up in the water as a result. And typically, when I'll pull the hoppers out is when I beat the bushes in the water or around the edges of the water and look for hoppers. If I see hoppers flying, then I fish them. If I don't see them, I fish ants and beetles because they're always around.
Yeah, yeah. Next question, Dean in Westford, Massachusetts asks, he's planning a trip near Rocky Mountain National Park first week of June. I understand the rivers may be blown out that week from melt runoff. So any suggestions on specific lakes, ponds, or fishable rivers they might bring along? Steve Schweitzer, the person we had on our last show, in fact, wrote a book on Rocky Mountain National Park.
Yes, Steve's book is very good. I'd highly recommend Steve's book.
Yeah.
There's also some Colorado angling guides, which specifically discuss that Lake Granby area. I haven't fished there an awful lot. I have fished a couple of small lakes there.
Yeah.
And
one thing about Steve's book is he breaks out a lot in the Rocky Mountain National Park at the different altitudes, what's iced out and what isn't, and what's accessible. So that part of the early season, that book would really be valuable to Dean.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think Schweitzer's book would be very good, and some of the Colorado angling guides, including Marty Bartholomew's.
Yeah, Marty.
Would be very good.
Marty's book, too, yeah. Danny in Carnelian Bay, California, says, with mayflies and caddis, I sometimes have better luck if I reduce the size of the flies relative to the hatch, going smaller, I guess. So he says, do you find increasing or decreasing fly size relative to primary terrestrials helps increase your strikes, or does it just not matter with terrestrials?
I think it really doesn't matter. What's real interesting, 2 years ago I caught my biggest rainbow of the year, about 23 inches, on a paintbrush ant, a foam ant.
And was that in Stillwater?
I was in the lake, and it was a nice vegetated bank, and I actually saw the fish rising and taking stuff, and I fished a size 12 paintbrush ant, landed the fish, pumped his stomach, and he was full of ants, size 22. The thing is that you've got everything from a size 22 ant to a size 12. 12 is a very common size for flying ants. You've got a whole spectrum of sizes, and the fish don't really care. They see a size 12 when they're eating 22s, and they go, damn, that's a big one. But they still take it.
Yeah.
They're used to seeing that size range and feeding on them. So size in terrestrials doesn't really matter, certainly not in ants and beetles, because there is a large variation in size.
Again, Thomas Murphy in Redmond. Thomas asked a lot of good questions tonight. What are the keys to determining the presentation, and how do you effectively bounce off the bank to get a lifelike drop in Oasis Stream? But we could apply this to the lake, too.
Mm-hmm. You don't need to bounce it off the bank. The thing is that typically the bugs are falling right out of the air in a lot of cases. In that case of terrestrial rain, they're coming right out of the upper air. They're not necessarily bouncing off of bankside vegetation. They don't have to look like that.
They're just falling in the water.
Right, right. The fish just care that they're there. They don't care how they got there.
Yeah.
The thing is that probably more of them fall right out of the sky than fall off of their vegetation because of the upslope blow-in pattern from the anabatic wind.
Okay.
So whether it's on a stream or on a lake, it's the same operative process.
Right, right. Dan Crowler's in Bismarck, North Dakota asks, says, looks like business is going to take him to Denver in mid-October. I know that it's getting late for bugs, but can you recommend where I should try to fish within a few hours of Denver, and how should I fish it? So.
Yeah, the South Platte Dream Stream stretch.
Yeah, that's a few hours away from Denver.
That's 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
You could go, if I was fishing at that time of year, I'd try either the Dream Stream section, or I'd try 11 Mile Reservoir, the mouth of 11 Mile Reservoir.
Mm-hmm.
The mouth of 11 Mile Reservoir at that time, fishing something like leeches off some of the rocky points, very productive. Leeches, woolly buggers, streamers. You've got very big fish in the lake there.
So, and, yeah, you get a little stream fishing and lake fishing in that area.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because the Dream Stream empties right into 11 Mile. The South Platte comes right into the mouth of 11 Mile Reservoir.
Right, right.
And that would be my favorite time at that time of year because you've got a lot of spawning fish.
Mm-hmm.
And very big fish that are moving from the lake up into the stream.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, a couple more coming in on the internet here. We're running out of time, but let me see if we can get these here. Charlie King in Denver, Colorado says, when fishing in unknown waters, are terrestrials your go-to flies? If so, is it a beetle or an ant?
It's probably a beetle. And if it isn't a beetle, it's a beetle with an ant trailer.
There you go, Charlie.
Cover both bases.
There you go, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's what to do. Okay, Rich in southeast Pennsylvania says, seems like Richard is fishing a lot from a pontoon boat or a float tube. Can you give us a tip from shore fishing, i.e. how far back and how does he walk down the bank? So how do you work the shore if you don't have a float tube?
Typically, what I like to do is angle my casts right up along the shore in front of me. I like to get them within about, I get them close to the shore, especially if there's overhanging vegetation. But I'll also blast some casts right out into the deeper water.
Right.
So I work all the water, because you'll have water, you'll have fish that are feeding close to the bank and farther out looking for terrestrials.
Yeah.
And you catch them in both places. So you cover a lot of water. It's the same thing that you do in a boat. You cover a lot of water in a boat.
Yeah, and it's, I think we discussed this maybe with, on one of the other shows recently, and we were talking about kind of quartering it out so that you get the little profile on the fly if you're doing.
And actually, from the shore of a lake, you can do a very good roll cast.
Yeah. Well, and Richard, you know that lake up here by me, and
yes.
That is super at night, just before dusk, when the bigger fish come into the edge, and I just walk right up and start fishing, like, maybe 30 degrees out angle or right next to the bank. Just keep walking up and walking up before I ever even go look, and that's where all the fish are. So.
Oh, yeah. That's a very effective method on just about any lake.
Yeah. So that's about it for tonight, and we covered just about every one of the questions, Richard, so I think we did a good job here.
Okay.
So let's wind this thing up, and we still have to give away our prizes. A one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine, and then that $20 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers in Boulder, where Richard was just tying the other day. So, and I think they're moving into a new building. I saw a sign up.
I saw their new shop. They're up on Pearl Street, 2344 Pearl Street now.
Yeah,
and great location. A lot of parking.
It was funny. Yeah, and what was funny is I drove by their old location on the way back home today from Boulder, and
it's an Orvis shop
moving
now.
Into their old shop.
It's not open yet. Orvis has the sign up. But,
yeah, they got their big sign up. Yeah, couldn't miss it.
It's going to be an Orvis shop.
So stick with us here, folks, for just a couple more minutes. We'll do these giveaways, and we'll close things up. Family Ties, that's T-Y-E-S. Family Ties is an organization which uses a shared interest in fly fishing and fly tying to enhance youth development and family relationships. They utilize resources in schools, communities, and businesses, and they invite your participation. Go to their website at www.familyties.com. That's family, T-Y-E-S.com. Family Ties, where every fish is a trophy and every kid is a hero. And just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please just take a minute and give us your feedback on the show. You can find a link on our homepage, the section under tonight's show, and it says, what did you think of the show? Just click on that link, leave your comments, we'd really appreciate it. Well, now it's time to give away our prizes, and the first, and these are randomly selected from our registration database, so if you didn't register yet, it's too late now, but do so for our next show, and maybe you'll win something. So tonight, that one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. Okay, we'll do our little random selection here. And that is going to Rod. Rod in Texas. Rod Rashears in Texas. Rod listens to about every show, I think. So he deserves to win. And Rod, if you're probably already a member, but we'll get you an extension. And if you're a lifetime member, you let me know and we'll get you fixed up with something. So congratulations, Rod. Okay, and then the one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine will go to Alan Bakila, and I probably destroyed that last name, but Alan in Connecticut. So Alan, congratulations on winning that one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine, an excellent magazine. I know you're going to enjoy it. Now, we'll give away this $20 gift certificate, and to win this, you have to answer the question that I'm going to ask, and Charlie wrote in, they already moved to the new shop, and opening celebration is this Saturday for Front Range Anglers, in case any of the locals around here are interested. Okay, so the question is that Richard coined his own phrase for the falling bugs out of the sky. What is his phrase that he uses to call the bugs falling out of the sky on the high winds? We've got a winner here, Warren Davis. Just won the $20 gift certificate, terrestrial rain. That's the correct answer I'm looking for, isn't it, Richard?
That's correct.
That's it, terrestrial rain. So we can all have a new term to use. And congratulations, Warren, on winning that. And we've got your information there. We'll get you in touch with Front Range, and you win that $20 gift certificate. And you can use that online as well, so you don't have to come all the way out here to Colorado from Ohio. Well, Richard, thanks a lot for being on the show tonight with us. It was a pleasure to talk with you again. And you need to come up and go fishing with me at the lake, huh?
Yeah, well, I might give you a call this week and
see what you're doing. Yeah, it's iced out. The ice is moving off, and it's getting warm enough that us old guys can handle it. And,
That's right.
And then, of course, my house is nearby in case we need a shot or a cup of coffee to warm us up. So
that's always handy.
But it's been, a real mix of weather here, so you never know what you're going to get. But thanks a lot for being on the show. We appreciate your time.
Well, I really enjoyed it. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. The next broadcast will be on April 16th, 7 p.m., 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and 7 p.m. Mountain Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And on that show, we're going to interview Tom Rosenbauer, as we talked about before. And our topic for the show is going to be fly fishing small streams. Tom Rosenbauer has mastered the strategies and techniques necessary to be productive on small streams, so listen in to learn his secrets next week, or the week after next. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Keeney's Fly Shop, the Platte River Fly Shop, Housatonic River Outfitters, and Wasatch Custom Angling Products for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. It's 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. We'll be happy to explain all the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.